20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We've got a great show for you today. Thanks so much for joining. The grades are done. I actually got them done on a Tuesday, the day after the game, or at least I finished them the day after the game, and this is Tuesday now, but you get my point. We're not having to wait till Thursday or Friday, so we're going to go over my film review as well as my grades for this game in just a moment. Hopefully you, like me, are still buzzing from this big win over not just Chicago, but four consecutive wins, three straight wins against the division. It's a great time to be a Green Bay Packers fan. We do have some news and notes from Monday that I want to go over as well. Before we get there, quick shout out to Brian Zaya for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Great day to sign up today. We do have the members Q&A coming up at 7 p.m. Central Time, so get signed up so you can participate in that. If you don't, no worries. I am going to open it up to everyone per usual as soon as that Q&A is done, but if you want to participate, get your questions in, etc., plus get all the other bonuses of being a member, check out those memberships over on YouTube when you have a chance. Also would appreciate if you could like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. That stuff helps the channel a ton, helps the algorithm, helps other people find the channel, so thank you in advance for that as well. As mentioned, we did have some news from Monday. Malik Heath was claimed by the Atlanta Falcons. I didn't think he would get claimed. I was a little bit on the fence with it, but kudos to Malik Heath. Kudos to the Falcons for picking him up. Nothing but the best to Malik Heath. I'm really excited that he gets an opportunity. Now, it's an opportunity with a team that's already eliminated from playoff contention, that's got Kirk Cousins currently at quarterback, but it's an opportunity nonetheless. So happy that Malik Heath gets that option and opportunity, but it will not be with the Green Bay Packers, either back on the active roster or on the practice squad. He is now an Atlanta Falcon. Meanwhile, Green Bay is now 2.5-point favorites going against Denver this Sunday in Denver. Slightly surprised by that line, and you know, maybe Vegas and the powers that be are just thinking that Denver's due. They've won what, 10 in a row, and they've got to probably lose one coming up here at some point. This should be a really, really fun game. I cannot wait for this one. This is right up my alley. I love games that are uncommon opponents, AFC versus NFC. Looking forward to this one and Packers Ravens, but there's another one that's going to have a big fight feel to it. But Packers now 2.5-point favorites going into Denver in that game. Meanwhile, Eagles lost to the Chargers on Monday Night Football, a brutal game for Jalen Hurts, including the first time ever that a player had two turnovers on one play. That was one of the more remarkable things that I've seen in a football game. For those who didn't catch it, Jalen Hurts threw an interception. The defensive, I think it was like a defensive tackle who picked it off from Jalen Hurts, starts rumbling down the field. He's got two hands on the ball. Still gets the ball stripped away, fumbles it. Jalen Hurts recovers. He's got the ball. He starts to go with it. He fumbles the ball and gets it stripped away, and then the Chargers recover. So Jalen Hurts, there's three turnovers in total on the play, but two for Jalen Hurts. Again, the first time in NFL history that it's been recorded that two turnovers happened on the same exact play. Man, with Philly crashes, they crash hard. Hurts was terrible in the game. I think it was, what, four interceptions and a fumble, including the final play of the game in overtime where he throws the pick. It's a little bit of an unlucky play at the end, but he had one earlier that could have been picked off that wasn't as well. That offense is just not in sync at all. Feels remarkable that they were the Super Bowl team a year ago, and it feels remarkable that Green Bay just lost to that team who is clearly struggling. And when Philly crashes out over the last handful of years, they crash out hard. They are in the middle of a crash out at the moment, and I'm really interested to see if they can bounce back or if they just continue to spiral, and maybe Dallas still has a chance to win the NFC. We'll keep an eye on that for the remainder of the season, but tough times right now for the Philadelphia Eagles, and specifically with that offense and Jalen Hurts. Matt LaFleur did speak on Monday as well. No major takeaways from the press conference, no major updates or anything like that. He did confirm, though, on that final interception that Keyshawn Nixon was not responsible for Cole Kmet, which is what we talked about yesterday. He's going with DJ Moore. Evan Williams is the one that's supposed to be back there. You know, he said they kind of were selling out for the run on that play. They kind of guessed wrong. Evan Williams is going up. Williams talked about it in the locker room of how he was just hoping when he turned around, somebody somehow was back there. Well, that somebody somehow was Keyshawn Nixon, who came up with a massive play, really releasing DJ Moore to go and make that play in the end zone. If it's not for that, that's a wide open touchdown. And by the way, we talked about it yesterday, every indicator with how the Bears managed the clock at the end of that game was that they were going for touchdown and two-point conversion. Ben Johnson on Monday all but confirmed that they were, quote, highly likely to go for two if they scored a touchdown at the end there. That would have been, I mean, I don't even want to think about it. The stakes on that play. I mean, the division could come down to that. The playoff seeding could come down to that. One play, 1 2-point conversion, and you know that Ben Johnson's got something cooked up, right? And who knows if it works or not? And maybe the defense and Micah Parsons can just wreck shop, but you absolutely know that Ben Johnson is going to have something that is completely random, but they've worked on a ton, and who knows what that would have been. And it could have all come down to that one play. But Keyshawn Nixon said, no, 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 and shut the door at the end with a big-time interception, a massive play that we'll talk about more in just a moment as well. Meanwhile, Wes Hodkowitz pointed out on social media that the Packers are once again the NFL's top-ranked third-down offense after an impressive third-down performance against Chicago this past week. So those third-down efficiency stats are really, really important, and it is something that Green Bay's been really good at all year. They continued it against the Bears and now again are ranked number one in third-down efficiency on offense. Meanwhile, Week 14 is now completely in the books. If we look at the New York Times playoff odds calculator, they are now 95% to make the playoffs, 68% to win the division, and 10% to get the number one seed overall. I do think the number one seed's in play, but they probably need to win out the remainder of their games, which would be nice to get that bye. We'll see what that looks like, but it's at least a possibility right now. Green Bay's playing good football. Let's just see if they can get the win versus Denver first, and then we can start looking at a few more of those contingencies. Right now, the NFC North is the biggest thing that they are looking at. There's opportunities to win it. Really, any three games that they win gives them a huge opportunity to win the division. But if they could get that one against Chicago, it really puts them in the driver's seat for that division title. So we'll obviously keep an eye on these odds for the rest of this regular season. But right now, they're in a very good spot overall. Before we get to grades, let's get to my film takeaways from this one. One of the big talking points, and something I asked Matt LaFleur about in the press conference as well, was the holding on Micah Parsons. And yes, there were a couple as we rewatched the tape and you saw it on the TV copy, or if you were live at Lambeau, it doesn't take a whole lot unless you're an NFL official to see that Micah Parsons is getting held a lot this season, and specifically in this game against Chicago as well. What I will tell you is, going back and watching the film, is that Green Bay got away with some too, including on Josh Jacobs' final touchdown, where that was what, I think that was like a third and goal. And Belton's blocking and a linebacker comes around and Belton reaches out, gets pretty close to very similar around the neck that Micah Parsons had, and kind of twists him. No call on the play. Josh Jacobs gets in the end zone. Green Bay scores the go-ahead touchdown. They call that hold. That's a field goal. In all likelihood, they would have a third and goal from like the 13-yard line. That's a tough situation to be in. So could have easily cost Green Bay 4 points in that situation. So just to note, I know we see somebody holding Micah, and well, our guys don't do that. There's nobody on the Packers offensive line that would. There were a few in this game for the Packers offensive line as well, and that's a big thing. Now, I am not absolving Micah Parsons having a billion different plays this year that could have been called holding, and none of them are getting called. That's not to give the NFL a free pass on what's been some pretty egregious officiating on Micah Parsons this year. No question about it. But just note that for me, in a game, if we're just talking about an individual game, as long as you're going to be consistent on both sides, I don't have a huge issue with it. I mean, if anything, Green Bay got the one on Rashawn Gary where, based on how they called it for both teams with everyone else, that's probably one that, that was one of the rare ones that they did call in that sort of situation. As we talked about with Mike Wall on Packaday Live, Mike's seen that exact sort of play gone without a holding penalty on numerous occasions. It wouldn't have stunned me if Rashawn didn't get that call, but he did. Micah didn't. Green Bay got away with some on the offense. As long as you're consistent with it, I don't really care. But on the season, it's been very frustrating watching Micah not get any of those calls. But thankfully, at least Green Bay had a few on the offensive line that could have been called against them as well. They were not. And for the most part, the refs were pretty consistent with that in this game. Number two, watching the Luke Musgrave drop on the All-22. I will admit, the All-22 is not great for close-ups, right? You're literally the furthest camera angle away from being able to view this stuff. But watching from the end zone view and seeing how he, to me, I still have yet to see anything. And I didn't think Fox? Yeah, I didn't think Fox gave us a great replay of that where they finally showed exactly what happened. But I still have yet to see anything that would lead me to believe that that play should have been overturned. I think it probably should have stood where you don't, and again, everything's stood now, they don't confirm, but I just don't see how you could overturn that play. And looking at the all 22, to me, it looks even more that he caught it. I don't know what to make of that. That's a weird situation. Clearly New York saw something in that situation. I don't know what it is. I wish I got a better view of it, but I thought Luke made a great play on it. To me, it looked like a catch. NFL saw it otherwise, but at least on the all 22, to me, I was even more, you know, in the feel of like, I don't understand how you overturned it. But again, all 22, not perfect for that, but just looking at it, slowing it down from far away, at least it looked like a catch again. I talked about over the last couple weeks, a formation that I would like to see with the Darian Kennard package, the six offensive line package. I talked about, I want to see more three wide receiver sets with Kennard and then Jacobs in the backfield. And the reason being is it makes it really tough on a defense of how do you want to come out defensively against that package? You basically have to come out in nickel. You can't go base against three wide. That makes things really tough. So you kind of inherently have to go in nickel in that situation. And now you've got a nickel defense against six offensive linemen up front. So you got four defensive linemen, two linebackers usually, against six offensive linemen. So you're six on six if you're not putting a safety into the box. Corner, corner, corner on your three wide receivers. And then you're usually your two safeties that are over the top, right? Now, if you drop a safety in the box, it changes things. But even still, you know, you can leave a player unattended and still have that running back try to get positive yardage out of it. There's a lot of different ways that you can go about doing that. But the even to take it a step further, what I asked for is to kind of use Christian Watson like kind of behind the offensive line, almost like that H-back like we've seen him do in the past. And wouldn't you know it? Wouldn't you know, out clearly, Matt LaFleur, Packaday Podcast, you know, listener or YouTube viewer, this week we got at the end of the game, that final drive, six offensive linemen, Jaden Reed, I think it was Romeo Dobbs. I'd have to go see who the other receiver was. Didn't really matter, but I think it was Dobbs, Reed. For sure, it's Christian Watson, Josh Jacobs in the backfield again, Belton as a six offensive lineman. And wouldn't you know it, Christian Watson motions in, and guess where he is? Chilling in that H-back role. And this is where it gets beautiful because they go play action. It's all set up to look like a run. You've got Christian Watson even entering in to give you maybe another blocker. Play action. You get Jaden Reed on a deep crosser, an intermediate crosser, and they pick up like 17 yards on the play. It's a tough formation for defenses because, you know, if you are going to go nickel against it, you are tempted to bring that safety down either pre or post snap to give you that extra body there. Because again, you're going against six offensive linemen and Josh Jacobs can bowl you over as well. You're just asking to get 5 yards on the ground in that situation. So you bring that safety up. It just gives you a lot of really cool looks, especially out of play action, max protect stuff. There's so many different things that you could do, but we got a glimpse of it and it worked out pretty damn well. Hopefully that's something Green Bay goes back to a little bit more moving forward. We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. While you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Jaden Reed against Denver as Green Bay tries to retain its hold on the number one seed in the NFC North. I'm also going to make some picks on Christian McCaffrey, Jaylen Warren, and Derrick Henry. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. So we all know a chef, a griller, a cooking hobbyist, or a stay-at-home parent who just enjoys making really good food for their family. I have a couple in my family and have seen them light up when they get that perfect ingredient, a piece of cookware, or a new grilling accessory as a present. I know because I love cooking and recently received some Omaha steaks, and I was beyond overjoyed. This holiday season, you can give the gift of USDA certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, cozy and convenient comfort meals, and so much more with Omaha Steaks. When I got my Omaha Steaks, I fired up the grill immediately, and I couldn't wait to taste the grass-fed, grain-finished steaks that showed incredible marbling. It was the perfect gift, and the flavor ended up being unbelievable. Now, Omaha Steaks delivers an exclusive lineup of USDA-certified tender steaks, and their fan-favorite filet mignons have achieved the distinction of USDA-certified very tender. And of course, they also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and delectable desserts. So right now, save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com using code PACKADAY. Let's see. What else do we have? Play calling to start the third quarter. I saw some people talk about how, you know, Green Bay had the momentum going in, you know, to halftime. They got the touchdown before half, and then you get the ball to start the third, and you have the opportunity to go down and score and really get Chicago on tilt and having to pass the ball and really kind of abandon the run game, right? And they immediately go three and out. And it's, oh, the play calling. What was Matt LaFleur thinking? Why was he taking some shots down the field? And, well, a couple things. If he goes run, and they go three and out, everyone's like, oh my goodness, this is classic Matt LaFleur. He takes his foot off the brakes. If he takes a shot play down the field and it doesn't work, oh, why are you taking a shot play down the field? What I will say is, you know, maybe the second down run wasn't great, although they very poorly executed the blocking on that run. But the first down play right out of halftime is a beautifully drawn up play, and Jaden Reed's going to be open on a, I would say probably like a 15-yard play, you know, kind of coming across the field along the sidelines. And it's beautifully drawn up. It's well executed by the wide receivers. You're clearing space. Reed comes underneath it. And like I said, you're going to probably get a 15, 20-yard gain out of it and start setting your offense up for success right away. Unfortunately, the blocking wasn't great. Jordan wasn't able to stay in the pocket, had to roll out and throw it away rather than what would have been an open Jaden Reed for a pretty big play to start the second half. And I think that would have got them going and potentially got points. This is where I always talk about that there's more nuance than just saying, oh, the play calling. You had a really good play call in right away to open that third quarter on first down, get a big play to Jaden Reed. It's drawn up perfectly, just didn't execute it up front from a blocking standpoint. And instead of a nice gain to Jaden Reed, it's an incomplete pass. And then you get a second down run that goes nowhere, and now you're in third and long. You have to settle for a check down to Chris Brooks, who makes one person miss but is only able to get 6 yards, and you're punting the ball away. If you execute the play on first down, if the blocking's a little bit better, that drive probably looks a little bit better. Maybe they get some points out of it, and maybe, again, Chicago goes on tilt and Green Bay wins running away. Either way, they won the game. That's all that matters. But I just think, again, play calling, there's a lot of nuance just saying, oh, the play calling could have been better. They execute that first play was a really, really good one. Last but not least, we saw last week on that first third down against Detroit, Micah Parsons drop into coverage, Xavier McKinney, Isaiah McDuffie, blitz on the play, and you end up with two free rushers because there's so much attention to Micah Parsons, and now Micah Parsons drops in coverage. So those players who are set to block him have to like readjust and find somebody else. And by the time they did, McDuffie and, you know, Xavier McKinney were at the quarterback. We saw a couple more instances of that this week, and it worked well again, generating some pressure on Caleb Williams. And I think the other cool thing here too is Micah and Enagbare were the ones that dropped into coverage on those plays. They look good doing it. Both of those players just fit Jeff Hafley's scheme so incredibly well. It's a conversation we're going to start having with Kingsley Enagbare and potentially bringing him back next year. But I thought two more plays added to that where you drop both of those players who have the athletic ability to cover in space, especially Micah, who could, I think, be an all-pro off-ball linebacker if he really wanted to. You know, he's got all that raw athleticism, and now you're dropping him into coverage teams are doubling him on most plays. So now you've got two players that have to sort of look for work. And in the meantime, you've got overloaded blitzes and, exotic blitzes coming at you. And you're just not ready for it because you had to be prepared for Micah in case he does rush, because he does 90% of the time. Just some really good stuff from Jeff Hafley. Encouraged by it. Want to see even more of it moving forward. All right, let's get to our grades. Top three on offense. It's a good trio. Josh Jacobs, number one, plus 1.15. I know that this is a box score that, is right around 4 yards per carry, doesn't reach 100 yards, doesn't have a ton through the air. I think it was 2 catches for 6 yards. He was fantastic. He was absolutely fantastic in this game. The big play was the third down, the third and two, where they pitch it outside to him. I have no idea. Matt LaFleur talked about it as well. He has no idea. It's just pure individual effort. There's 4 guys there that he has to make miss to get that first down. And it's a pitch outside. If he gets tackled 3-4 yards behind the line, that completely alters the entirety of that game moving forward. I don't know if Green Bay could have gone for it in that situation. It's just a massive play in the game. And that was pure individual effort by Josh Jacobs. Not sure about the play call on that one. That's one I think you could question a little bit. And the execution was terrible. And Josh Jacobs just made it right. That's the power of having super talented players, is that you could call a bad play and you could not even execute it, and the talented player still finds a way to make it right. And Josh Jacobs did in that situation. The touchdown run was huge at the end. That's not an easy run to get in the end zone there. He ran hard. He ran physical. He ran powerful. The third down run where he got around the edge was another key play. Just really A-plus stuff from Josh Jacobs all day long. It's not the sexiest box score, but it was worthy of a very good grade. Again, he ends up with a plus 1.15 in my top graded player on the team, actually, for the day. So kudos to Josh Jacobs. Christian Watson, number two, plus 1.05 grade. We don't need to go over it too much. Explosive play after explosive play. Beautiful job getting open down the field. Beautiful job running after the catch. A couple plays where he struggled to get off of coverage throughout the course of the game. I think there was at least one or two blocks that he probably would have liked to have had back a little bit. But overall, just a wonderful game from Christian Watson. Continues to impress coming off that ACL and MCL injury. And of course, the 2 touchdowns, 2 massive plays in that game. And then last but not least, number three, Jordan Love, plus 1.00 grade. Like Jordan in this one. PFF had 90-some plus grade on him. They, I think, were higher on Jordan than I was. Still had a very brutal pick to start the game. I thought the melt-in throw for the touchdown could have been a little bit more in front of him. That's probably a play that Brisker, I think, should have tipped away. And thankfully, Melton made a great adjustment to it, and Brisker doesn't get the football. But Love probably needs to put that a little bit further out there. There was the other play to Bo Melton down the sideline that I think is probably a turnover-worthy play. But Bo Melton does a great job of pass interfering on the play to make sure that there's not going to be a turnover and you can punt the ball away instead. Just a few of those moments for Jordan in this game that led it to be maybe not a plus 2 or plus 3 type performance for me, but still really, really good. I talked about it with Mike Wall. The little play that he made to Jaden Reed for that first down on 3rd and 2 or whatever, it's only 3-yard gain. That's a crazy degree of difficulty throw. There's another play. It's an 11-yard over the middle throw to Luke Musgrave. There's a player that comes untouched right up the middle, and he just goes sidearm and slings it to the side to get that ball off and still leads Luke Musgrave on the play. I mean, he's fading away for touchdown throws. He's checking stuff at the line of scrimmage. There is so much really, really good stuff in this game from Jordan. But few negatives that just bring it down a little bit, especially a huge interception to start that game that could have given Chicago an early lead. That's why it's not a little bit higher. He's still had a great game, plus 1.00 in my third highest graded player on offense. Bottom three on offense. I want to talk about these top two kind of together. These are two players that are in contract years, and neither of them right now are playing good football. And Green Bay really needs these two players to play better football. Rashid Walker, negative 0.55. PFF had a positive grade on him in this game. I have no idea how. I thought I was actually generous giving Rashid a negative 0.55. And that gives me no joy. I've really enjoyed Rashid Walker's career in Green Bay. I think we probably see the writing on the wall. I don't think he's going to be back next year, but he is not playing the level of football that I have come accustomed to seeing out of Rashid Walker. And that has to change. And I don't think it's worth going to Jordan Morgan right now, but I kind of want to light a little bit of a fire under Rashid. And if maybe this week in Denver is probably not the week to put Morgan in, I would probably just stick with Rashid. But man, it has been disappointing. There's one play on tape where it's a run play. Jacobs gets going to the right and he gets a big gain out of it. It's at least a first down run. It's like a 10 plus yard run on the play. And Sheed is just there to kind of seal the outside defender. It's not a difficult block. It's really not. He's just got to seal the player to the outside. He's the far left player. It's a run. I don't know if it was off right tackle, but it was to the right side running far away from his man. And it's just a really lazy block on his end. And the defender gets easily around him. And guess what happens? Jacobs makes like two people miss, and he's going to be one-on-one with the safety in the open field. But Rashid Walker's guy, who Rashid did a terrible job of blocking and really poor effort on it, comes around the play, chases it down from behind, and tackles Jacobs from behind. And instead of getting a one-on-one with a safety, it's still a nice run by Jacobs, a 12-yard gain, but cheated the easiest block on the play to make. He doesn't make it. And the player that ended up tackling Jacobs was his guy. It's just stuff like that that's on tape. And for a player in a contract year that has the opportunity to earn over $20 million per year on the open market as a starting left tackle, maybe he gets it anyway. I don't know, but I would be hesitant. If this is the Rashid Walker that you get in a contract year, what Rashid am I going to get when I give him a four-year, $80 million deal? I would be very wary and buyer beware if I were another team in that scenario. Somebody has to have a conversation and be like, Rashid, you're better than this. And if you go out and play better, you are going to get a massive paycheck. Like, just go out and ball out for the last, you know, few weeks of the season and regular season and in the playoffs, and you're going to get $22 million per year. Just need to see a little bit more. And so negative 0.55 for Rashid. Then the other one's Romeo Doubs, negative 0.35. He is on a rough stretch right now. I don't think people are really talking about it. No catches in this game. His route running is lacking in attention to detail and in urgency right now. And even like some of these plays, it's close if that's a drop along the sidelines on that one where, you know, Jordan gets it, you know, gets it to him and it kind of goes off of his fingertips. PFF did not grade it as a drop. I think he should have made a better play on it. I don't know if it's quote unquote a drop, but I thought he should have made a better play on it. Some of his timing on his jumps for two consecutive weeks now is just a little bit off. Romeo's been a good player for Green Bay. There's no two ways about it. There's no question about it. But right now, he is in a slump, and I think it's of his own accord. Struggling to get off of coverage, route running's been, I don't know if I want to say lazy, but just lacking attention to detail. And the hands have been hit or miss lately. Just need more from Romeo. He's going to be a key part of this team for the remainder of this season. I think he's gone in the offseason, but right now, on the season, he's in the negative for me, which is pretty rare for a wide receiver. Pretty rare, and he's in the negative now. He's behind Golden. He's behind Savion Williams. He's behind Dontavian Wicks. He's behind Matt. You know, he's behind everybody, pretty much. In fact, I think the only receiver he's not behind, he's behind Bo Melton. The only receiver he's not behind is Malik Heath. I need to see more from those two. Rashid Walker, negative 0.55. Romeo Doubs, negative 0.35. Need those two to step up in a significant way the remainder of the season. My third lowest grade was Emmanuel Wilson. I didn't think this was a great game for Wilson. He had the slip late in the game. You might say, well, that's the turf. You are a home team. You've got to know what cleats you need to be wearing to make sure that that doesn't happen. Slip on that play. I thought there were then two other runs where he had better avenues to take. There's one where it's a beautifully designed run and everyone blocks it perfectly, but Wilson gets a little over anxious. And rather than letting his guy set up the block, he basically runs through the block and runs right into the defender. There was a lot more meat on that bone, and I thought he missed out. I thought he missed a read later in the game. He had a kind of a cutout side opportunity. And sorry, I almost knocked my light down there. So excited. He had a cutout side opportunity, and I thought he missed it. And then again, the slip late in the game. Just a few negatives there for Emmanuel Wilson in this one. I will say, though, I don't grade special teams, but I did think him as a kick returner looked like a real option moving forward. That was a cool sight, but thought as a running back in this game, Wilson struggled just a little bit. Some noteworthy players on offense, Chris Brooks plus 0.25, another really impressive blitz pickup on the day. Had that, you know, check down where he made a person miss. Didn't get a ton of opportunity, but made the most of it when he was in there. Jaden Reed returned from injury, plus 0.55 grade. Really liked what I saw. That third down conversion on the third and two. He had a couple end arounds that got positive yardage, caught everything his way, had a couple other routes where he got open. Now, that was another negative for Jordan, by the way, on the deep ball down to Romeo Doubs, where Doubs couldn't come out with it. Jaden's coming open over the middle. There's an easy throw there. He doesn't take it. But yeah, Reed's open on that play. I just thought all day long, Jaden Reed played really good football in his first game back. We'll be right back. Hey friends, we've all gone through difficult times, whether it be with addiction, heartbreak, financial troubles, or hundreds of other challenging situations that get presented to us on a day-to-day basis. I know I certainly have, and if you have, just know you're not alone. And the thing is, taking care of your mental health shouldn't be harder than taking care of your physical health. If you pull a muscle, you go see a doctor. But when it comes to finding the right therapist, suddenly it's frustrating. You've got long wait lists or you're staring down huge out-of-pocket costs. That's what usually stops people from getting help. That's where Rula comes in. Rula makes therapy simple, affordable, and fast. They work with most major insurance plans, and the average session copay is just $15. Just 15 bucks. Now, every therapist on the platform is licensed, vetted, and picked for their expertise, so you know you're going to talk to somebody legit, not just whoever happens to be available. And getting started could not be easier. You answer a few quick questions about what matters to you, and Rula connects you with in-network providers who actually fit your needs. You pick the time, and you could be talking to a therapist as soon as the next day. I can't stress enough how much therapy has been a blessing in my life, and it can be in yours as well. And Rula gives you that opportunity without having to break the bank. Now, thousands of guys have already used Rula to finally get the care they've needed, so don't keep putting it off. Go to Rula.com/Packaday and get started today. That's RULA.com/Packaday. Take the first step, get connected, and take control of your mental health. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work, or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Packaday. Again, ZocDoC, ZocDoc.com/Packaday. Bo Melton also was plus 0.55. A big play down the field. The touchdown obviously doing a lot of the heavy lifting there, but solid, not spectacular with anything else, but that play was certainly spectacular and got him well in the positive on that play. The tight ends combined, the trio, plus 0.85. The best game from the tight ends after the Tucker Kraft injury. Wiley had a plus 0.4. Fitz had a plus 0.25. Musgrave had a plus 0.2. All three of the tight ends graded in the positive for a plus 0.85 overall. In the aggregate, they did their best in this game to make up for Tucker Kraft, obviously not being out there, but a good game overall for the trio of tight ends. Aaron Banks and Sean Ryan, plus 0.65 for both of them. Thought both of them played a really sound game up front. This offensive line is getting better week to week right now. Sean Ryan's playing better than Elton Jenkins was, period, end of story. There's no question about it to me. Anthony Belton, we're going to talk about in just a moment, but Banks is starting to play some really good football. Had a couple of really fun pancakes in this game. Zach Thomas playing solid. The one that right now needs to play better, we talked about already, in Rashid Walker. But both Ryan and Banks were good. And then Anthony Belton, PFF's lowest graded player on offense for Green Bay, was Anthony Belton again. I had a negative 0.1 grade for Belton. If you go and watch this one, this was your first real look at like a true proof of concept for Anthony Belton. He had some really, really good plays in this one. A handful of plays he'd like to have back, specifically usually in pass pro, But man, there's some really good stuff on tape from Anthony Belton in this one. This one had me encouraged that Anthony Belton is truly the right guard of the future for Green Bay. Ends up as a slight negative for me. It's okay. He's learning and he's getting better in real time. And that's really exciting as well. I think he's their best right guard right now. Sean Ryan's move to center has been very successful the last couple of weeks. He seems to be getting better in that spot. Again, Banks is playing his best football of the year. That interior is getting better. And that's a huge, huge sign and a huge step. And again, the only starting offensive lineman this week that graded in the negative for me was Rashid Walker. Now let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. Top three on defense. Number one is the player that midway through the game, I saw a bunch of tweets saying, cut him, get him off the team, bench him, etc. That was Keyshawn Nixon. This is why I say, don't ride the waves. There's going to be bad moments. There's going to be good moments. Keyshawn is a polarizing figure. I get it. I think he leads the league in defensive penalties for a defensive back with 12. That's almost like a penalty per game for Keyshawn Nixon. That's not great. But his pass breakups are good. His overall coverage is good. PFF has a overall good grade on him. I think he's like 28th corner in the league. He is now in the positive for me. And he comes up with a massive interception at the end of this game. Both PFF and I had Keyshawn Nixon as the highest graded defender in this game. Clearly the interception at the end is doing some heavy lifting here, but even without the pick, Nixon would have been a slight positive in this game. Even the negatives that he had, the personal foul penalty is not a negative grade for me. Just not. It should have been offsetting at best or at worst. That's just not a personal foul on Keyshawn Nixon. It's just not. So no negative grade there. Had a big negative grade for the illegal hands to the face. Had a negative grade for the touchdown that he allowed where he had good coverage but just couldn't bat it away. There were negatives there. And I understand some of the frustration. But what I want out of my corners is when they make a mistake, they can bounce back and go play the next play. Nixon did that. Had a really good rest of the game. Couple pass breakups. And then, of course, the interception at the end, which was, to me, one of the plays of the year. To beat the Bears on that particular play, to come off of DJ Moore, recognize that Komet was open, beeline back there, and then make the catch at the high point as well. Just really good stuff from Keyshawn Nixon, especially late in this game. And again, both PFF and I had him as the highest graded defender for Green Bay. Stop me if you've heard this name before in the top three. Evan Williams. He's everywhere. Now, he did get a negative for that final play because he was in the wrong spot. That's usually not great. And just about everything he did was great throughout the day. So many plays where he's by the ball. So many freaking plays. He comes up and tackles aggressively. He was good in coverage in this one. And he just flew around the field. They used him in a variety of different ways. I can't say enough about the level of play that Evan Williams is playing at. And to me, it's an all-pro level. Maybe not first team, but in that second team, he's not going to get it. It's not even going to be close. But to me, he's playing at a second team all-pro level, Pro Bowl level. He's been fantastic. And for me, probably my favorite player to watch this year so far. The number three, Edgerrin Cooper, plus 0.6, 11 tackles in this game. He was everywhere, had some big time stops, and it's just really tough to get past him because, you know, he's so fast. He can be there in a moment's notice. And I thought he was good in coverage and specifically in run defense in this game. Bottom three on defense, not great that all three of them are defensive tackles. Jordan Riley, negative 0.25. Not a ton of opportunity for Jordan Riley, but I thought he got bounced off of his spot a few different times. Colby Wooden, negative 0.2. Some good in this game for Wooden, but some not so good. Again, a couple times where, especially during double teams, he's not being able to hold up at the point of attack quite as well. This was, to me, not a bad game for Colby Wooden. He was mostly fine. That's a good Bears interior of the offensive line, which is why you're seeing some of these grades like they are, but still ended in the negative for Wooden. And then Warren Brinson, negative 0.15. And the fourth lowest graded player on PFF's list, besides those three, was Carl Brooks, the other defensive tackle. So Green Bay has some issues there that they've got to get cleaned up a little bit. We'll see if Riley gets better over time, what Bohanna can bring to the team. But that was a little bit concerning that at minimum, the bottom three players in this game were defensive tackles. Let's see. Noteworthy players on defense, Micah Parsons, plus 0.55. I love his drops into coverage. He was, again, relentless as a pass rusher. Drew what should have been a couple holding calls that just went uncalled. He had a really good game. Maybe not the, you know, three sack performance or things like that, but overall, I thought his effort was great. and he could have made more of an impact had it not been for some of those holding slash non-holding calls. But either way, really good game for Parsons. And Igbari, also plus 0.55 grade. I thought he had a really nice day dropping into coverage, big time sack, which was set up by Micah Parsons. And then that third down play before the final play to Keyshawn Nixon on the interception, he has a huge run stuff on third down to put them in fourth and inches or fourth and one. If Enigbare doesn't make that play, they get the first down, and who knows how that game ends up. So just a massive, massive play from Enigbare on that particular one. Rashawn Gary had a neutral grade. It's a little bit disappointing, again, based on the fact that you're getting a lot of one-on-ones. I thought he came out early pretty intense and was moving around, and then it just kind of plateaued a little bit. Some ups and downs for Gary in this game. The other thing, too, is you saw him chasing after, you know, Caleb Williams in this game a couple times, and that speed just isn't quite there. I don't know if they need to maybe remake his body a little bit, but you want the physicality, but he's almost more of like an early rundown guy right now than he is an obvious pass rusher, and that's a disappointment. Justice Mosqueda posted out the chart of like pass rushers and quick wins, and it's brutal for Rashawn Gary. He's just not getting quick wins at the line of scrimmage right now. So again, fine player, neutral grade this week. It's not terrible. It's not bad, but I think everyone's wanting just a little bit more from Rashawn Gary. Nate Hobbs, plus 0.05, a better experience for Nate Hobbs in this game. Gave up maybe a completion on a crosser. That's a tough play. Don't really give him much fault on that one. And I like the way that he played. He was coming up attacking, playing more physical. This was a much better brand of football for Nate Hobbs than we saw, you know, prior to the injury and just some really bad football earlier this year. This was much, much better for Hobbs. Javon Bullard, plus 0.25, just continues to play great football. Didn't get as much of a chance in this one with Hobbs coming back and playing in the slot, but I like that platoon. Javon Bullard, this is why I talked about when they got Hobbs, is what I would have done. Put Javon Bullard in an obvious base nickel situation and then put Nate Hobbs in the obvious passing downs. That worked well in this game and is something I think they'll continue to do moving forward. Just to recap it, top three on offense, Josh Jacobs, Christian Watson, and Jordan Love. Bottom three on offense, Rasheed Walker, Romeo Doubs, and Emmanuel Wilson. Top three on defense, Keyshawn Nixon, Evan Williams, and Edrian Cooper. Bottom three, Jordan Riley, Colby Wooden, and Warren Brinson. Let's do best of the season so far. I'm not going to go with the grades themselves. You can check those out over at PackerReport.com a little bit later in the day on Tuesday. Jordan Love, number one on offense. Josh Jacobs, number two. Tucker Kraft, still number three on offense, despite not playing these last handful of weeks. Bottom three on offense, Jordan Morgan, Rasheed Walker, and Anthony Belton. Top three on defense, Micah Parsons, Evan Williams, and Edrian Cooper. And bottom three on defense, Nate Hobbs, Nasir Stackhouse, and Carl Brooks. Just a quick upcoming reminder of things coming up over the next couple days. We will get a Mike Wall film review from Packers Bears coming up later on Tuesday. Members Q&A coming up at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. So again, make sure to sign up for those memberships. It'll be open to everyone once the Q&A is done. Paul Farrington show coming up Wednesday morning. And then I'm going to try to do a quick, probably half hour, happy hour at some point Wednesday afternoon. Remember, I'm going to be out of town Thursday through Sunday, but I'm going to try to do a really quick happy hour for about 30, 40 minutes on Wednesday. So keep an eye out for that as well. It's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelstinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, and Nemo. See you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.